Because a lot of times we have this, you know, conception of a non-drinker as someone who either had to quit drinking because they went over the deep end, right? So they had a problem. Or maybe they're like hyper religious or, you know, really something weird about them, right? And I think I really changed that kind of perception when we look today at the science and the statistics. There's really no safe amount of alcohol to drink. We can kind of go into the science behind that. But I look at people who, you know, have really incredible lives. They've built beautiful businesses or beautiful movements. They're writing books. They're sharing messages with their world. They're really deeply connected with their family and their communities. They want to make an impact on the planet. And alcohol doesn't seem to figure a big portion of their time or energy. And I look up to people like Tony Robbins and Brené Brown, Deepak Chopra, Gabby Bernstein. They all happen not to drink. And so now when if someone were to come to me and say, oh, I don't drink, I'd actually be like, huh, they have a little secret to success.
Hello and welcome back to Stories of Being. I'm Ingrid, and each week I sit down with individuals who are changing the way we relate to ourselves, each other, and our planet. In this week's episode, I talk to Karolina Rozanka-Wolska. Karolina is an alcohol-free empowerment coach and best-selling author who specializes in helping women change their relationship with alcohol. After living a pretty normal and kind of standard life of drinking through college, then happy hours after work, drinks with friends on weekends and at dinner parties as, you know, she got older, Karolina was really curious about how else she could feel, you know, without the constant cycle of drinking, feeling crap, having a few good days, drinking, feeling crap, etc. So she started to explore living an alcohol-free life. She truly believes that transforming your relationship with alcohol is key to living an empowered, fulfilled, and purposeful life, and that giving up alcohol really opens up the floodgates to creativity, intuition, drive, and a whole lot of self-love. In this conversation, we talk about her own story and journey to, you know, giving up alcohol and becoming alcohol-free, what we gain when we give up alcohol rather than what we lose, challenges that may come up when reducing, limiting, or giving up alcohol, the science behind alcohol and why it can make us feel so crappy, as well as remembering what it is we find fun when alcohol, you know, is no longer part of our life. This conversation is in no way about demonizing alcohol at all. If it's working for you, awesome. But it's more so about offering just a different perspective when it comes to our relationship with alcohol and just what else we can gain if it's something you are curious about limiting or giving up altogether. So hopefully, yeah, you get something out of it. You can listen to it with curiosity. I really hope you find it interesting and please enjoy. I thought a really good place to start would be to kind of hear from you. If you'd met someone, say, 10 years ago and they came up to you, you're at a party, out to dinner, whatever it was, and they said to you, oh, I'm not drinking tonight or I'm not a drinker. What would your reaction have been like 10 years ago, say?
That's such a good question. I was such a different person 10 years ago. And, you know, I was really conditioned in a way of thinking that alcohol was the secret to being cool, worldly, sophisticated, glamorous, you know, getting a sense of belonging and acceptance with people. So I would have thought I was talking to a total weirdo, right?
Yes.
And I think that we have these kind of perceptions a lot of times around alcohol and both not drinking that kind of feed into our belief systems that really have nothing to do with the drink itself. And it's been so interesting on my journey to learn and peel back some of the layers that I used to have about what I thought alcohol was doing for me in the positive. Like I was said, you know, maybe I was thinking it was making me more glamorous or more sophisticated or more relaxed or more independent. And really kind of piecing those out and actually asking myself, is any of that really true? Or is that a trick of marketing or socialization that I picked up from different sources in my life? And also changing some of the beliefs I have about non-drinkers. Because a lot of times we have this, you know, conception of a non-drinker as someone who either had to quit drinking because they went over the deep end, right? So they had a problem. Or maybe they're like hyper religious or, you know, really something weird about them, right? And I think I really changed that kind of perception when we look today at the science and the statistics. There's really no safe amount of alcohol to drink. We can kind of go into the science behind that. But I look at people who, you know, have really incredible lives. They've built beautiful businesses or beautiful movements. They're writing books. They're sharing messages with their world. They're really deeply connected with their family and their communities. They want to make an impact on the planet. And alcohol doesn't seem to figure a big proportion of their time or energy. And I look up to people like Tony Robbins and Brené Brown, Deepak Chopra, Gabby Bernstein. They all happen not to drink. And so now when if someone were to come to me and say, oh, I don't drink, I'd actually be like, huh, they have a little secret to success.
Yes. Clue. Yes. And it's interesting. It's actually really interesting when you stop and think about people who drink versus people that don't. And yeah, what they're doing and maybe why they're not. And that doesn't mean that people that drink are not successful at all. But actually taking a moment and stopping and looking at that is actually quite interesting.
Yeah. And I think it's really important for anyone who wants to change their relationship with alcohol. If you have a negative view of a non-drinker, then you will never want to become that, right? So it's really important if this is a topic that's interesting to you to actually find very positive references for people who don't drink, almost role models. So that way you change your perception of what it means not to drink and you find positive meanings. And again, it's not this black and white thing or judgmental thing or moral thing or anything like that. It's just finding different evidence because all our lives we were fed the James Bond and the Sex and the City story instead.
Yes. So what was your drinking behavior? I think you made a really good point about it's either all or nothing. Like you stop drinking when you're an alcoholic or you've gone off the deep end or whatever it is. And that's not actually, doesn't have to be the case. So what was your relationship with alcohol like before you stopped drinking? And why did you start sort of going down this path of reducing or limiting alcohol?
Yeah, I love this question because, again, we have this black and white view of it. And, you know, I started drinking like most people and around high school and college. And I was really shy and introverted when I was growing up. Still introverted, but not as shy. And so when I started drinking, I was like, oh my gosh, this magical elixir turns me into this extroverted person. I felt more popular, more talkative. It was easier to make friends. And I really quickly honed into this like party identity. You know, so in college, that's what I was doing every weekend. I was partying way too much. I continued that behavior on into grad school. Not very healthy. I also didn't have other healthy coping mechanism tools. Wasn't eating, you know, it was college, right? Let's give me a break for a second. But I started to grow up basically in my mid to late 20s. I settled down. I, you know, started a career. I got married. You know, I started building a home and drinking became something I compartmentalized. So basically Monday through Thursday, I got really into health and mindfulness and I would eat healthy and go to yoga classes and eat my vegetables. But then every single weekend without fail, alcohol still played a really big role. And it was all your normal stuff. You know, maybe it was going out with friends. Maybe it was a movie. Maybe it was a wedding or a networking event. Maybe it was just some wine at home. It didn't matter. Every weekend, alcohol was involved. And on Monday mornings, I would wake up feeling a shell of myself. I woke up feeling groggy and exhausted, sometimes deeply even ashamed that maybe I overdid it. And I felt like I took two steps forward in my healthy lifestyle during the week and then five steps backward over the weekend. I was really driving myself mad. I was living in this cycle for years and years and years and years. And every time I really wanted to take a break from alcohol, first of all, I had that black and white notion that, oh my gosh, everyone's going to think I'm an alcoholic. Or I was looking at my social calendar and I was like, well, there's that networking event or there's that party. Like, you can't do it right now. And it wasn't until I heard of Dry January back in 2018 that finally I had this light bulb moment that I could actually take a break from alcohol and not have to explain it to anyone. And it was the first time in adulthood that I actually had some space away from alcohol. And I literally fell in love with it. I fell in love with how much more energy I had, how much deeper my sleep got. I fell in love with how much my mood was elevated. I was noticing things like the nature around me more. I was really enjoying hiking more. I was connecting better with people, just really being more present with them, laughing more. But I don't really think I'm allowed to keep going once February comes around. I have this belief in my mind that normal adults drink. So if I want to be normal, I have to drink. So I drink a few times that February. And the contrast to the non-drinking was so big. You know, not only does it completely ruin my sleep, makes me feel groggy, and I'm talking just like one or two drinks, but the biggest thing I noticed was how much it decreased my mood. So I had a drink maybe an hour later. I'm noticing I'm cranky. I'm irritated. I'm frustrated. I'm even picking little fights with my husband. And I was like, wait a minute. I was just on cloud nine in January without alcohol. And now here I'm drinking because I think it's fun, but it's actually making me feel negative, right? And not just the next day. Obviously, that's pretty normal and obvious, but even in the moment. And I was like, maybe this isn't what I thought it was. And I decided to take another break at that moment. And this time around, I decided to excavate literally every belief I had around why alcohol is positive and change all of those subconscious beliefs for myself. At the same time, I went on a self-discovery journey so big. I rapidly increased my self-esteem, my self-love, my self-confidence, and I started to really get the confidence and the knowledge of what I really wanted to do with my life. And so I didn't realize it back then, but when I was drinking every weekend, it was as if the week wouldn't go fast enough. Like, I just can't wait to get to the reward at the end of the week, right? I didn't realize how unfulfilled I was throughout my week. And so I actually, that year, spent some time really digging deep. What do I want to do on this planet? What kind of career do I want to have? How do I want to, you know, have a sense of meaning and purpose and impact? And I changed everything. I launched a business. I became a coach. I wrote a book, you know, and flash forward 6 years later, I am now traveling the world, helping thousands of women a year. My book is in bookstores. I live a completely different life. And I'm never waiting for the weekend to have a little source of joy. I get to feel fulfillment every single day.
Yeah, I think that is, I mean, that's such an important point. And right. Like you mentioned, it's like the cyclical nature of being healthy beginning of the week, drink, feel crap, take a couple of days to feel better, do it again.
Exactly.
It doesn't then give you the space to, like you're saying, tap into yourself and think about what life you want or what you want and or what even kind of lights you up and gives you energy, because you are in this kind of cyclical pattern, always trying to get back to kind of feeling okay. And it's only when you take a break, like you did for Dry January, that you realize, I guess, how different you can feel. And but people just don't get that opportunity.
It is such a big self-discovery journey. And you know, a lot of times we drink as a society because we think it's fun. And, you know, I could put brain nodes onto a person's brain and trigger like some kind of stimulation that triggers their, you know, amygdala, whatever. And we could say that you're having fun, but are you really? Or are you just having this like controlled stimulation, right? Whereas like, what really brings you joy? What's really fun for you? You know, and some of these questions we haven't asked ourselves as adults since we were kids, right? And I think that's a really fascinating thing. Oftentimes, the top question I get from people is, I'm bored when I don't drink, or I don't know how to have fun. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so exciting, because we have so much to explore and experiment together, because there is a great source of passion and joy within you. It's just untapped right now.
Yes. Yes. And adults. They just forget what actually brings them joy and fun, and that often revolves around alcohol. So when that's removed, yeah, you have to kind of rediscover that, which is a really interesting process to go through, or even kind of understanding that you have to rediscover it is quite interesting.
Yes, it is. It is. And you know, something you mentioned earlier too, is like when I was living that cyclical nature, you know, not only was it maddening because I was like never making progress, but it was also defeating, right? And I would wake up feeling like, what am I doing? And, you know, I would make these little rules. I was trying to moderate my drinking for so long. And on the surface, I was successful. I actually drank less every year than I did the year before. But it was crazy. It was like, okay, only 2 drinks this night, no drinking tonight, not past this clock. Like, it was so many rules. And there's so many times I would break a rule. Sometimes I really overdid it and really broke a rule, or sometimes just by a little bit. But it slowly made me start to lose self-trust in myself. And like, I couldn't actually follow my intentions. And so one of the first things that happened when I took a break from alcohol was that just showing up for myself and doing the thing I said I would do, literally without making it hard on myself with having something that changes your prefrontal cortex, you know, to like just want more or whatever. I seriously started to wake up every day being like, oh my gosh, like I went 3 weeks without drinking, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks. Like, who is this woman? She feels like Superwoman. And that confidence started to cascade into all these other areas of my life, because I didn't think I could do that and still enjoy it and have fun. And so I was like, what else have I been telling myself I can't do? And that's what really broke the boundaries for me to like get into entrepreneurship and launch a business and write a book. Because I was also telling myself stories that I couldn't do that or it wasn't possible or all this kind of stuff that really did cascade that way too. And I think going alcohol free in a world that really expects you to drink also gives you this inherent courage to kind of go your own way instead of following the crowd and the herd. And that level of courage isn't just in this little scenario. It's courage that also spills over to do what you really want to do and gives you sense of meaning and purpose and love and connection that may not look like the boxes that society has put out there for you to do. So it's like most people can imagine there's going to be a lot of physical changes or benefits or biological effects of ditching alcohol. But there's also so many emotional, spiritual, you know, intellectual things that happen. And I'm not an outlier. Like this happens to my clients all of the time, where you get really this sense of life and energy back to you. And you have this new chapter in front of you. And you're like, I literally have never known myself as an adult without alcohol. So it's like everything gets to be brand new and exciting. And there's no limits too.
Yes, it's amazing. And I'm in Australia. So obviously the drinking culture here is drinking is a big part of our culture. And if you say you don't drink, or I'm not drinking tonight or whatever, not drinking can probably be seen as disempowering. But like you're saying, it can actually be this really empowering thing. And I think the point you made around it's the not drinking, but it's the cascade effect and stepping into that courage and standing your ground and all of those things it's a really massive part of it. When you stopped drinking, say outside of Dry July, how did like your friends, family, social groups, how did they react? Was there a bit of a like, ooh, what are you doing? Yeah. Or were they all quite accepting of the choices you were making?
Great question. And so, you know, as I went through my journey and I started peeling back every subconscious belief I had about alcohol and really changing it, it got to a point where it was like, there's no point for me to drink, right? Like, I don't see any benefit with it. Plus, I've literally opened the door to this new magical universe. Like, why would I ever want to go back to playing small? And that took some time, right? This isn't like an overnight switch I pushed to just completely make my desires for alcohol disappear, but it's where I ended up. And I think I was just so excited about it. For years, that question kept me up at night because I wanted to take a break. And I was like, yeah, but what is this person going to think? And what am I going to say here? And all that stuff, you know, when I was in that cyclical pattern before. But I think that new level of confidence and this new sense of courage and just all of this like beauty that I was experiencing really helped me kind of, like you said, stand my ground when it came to like sharing this with other people. So when it came to like my friends, for example, you know, I basically called the elephant in the room. Like, you know, I talked about how I don't feel good after I drink and that, you know, I'm feeling amazing without it. And everyone's shaking their head, like being like, yep. You know, I don't like that effect either. I'm tired after that too, you know, and like there bred actually a lot more vulnerability, but closeness with us because I wasn't the only one, you know, I'm sorry, but no adult feels good after drinking alcohol the next day. That is biologically impossible. And so it's like when I was being just honest about it, it almost brought us closer together. And what it started to do is open the door instead of talking about like rumors or gossip. Like we started talking about our deeper dreams and things that we really wanted out of our life. So it actually brought us closer together. Some of my friends decided to take a break, or I influenced them to take a break later on. I never told them to, but they were just kind of curious to see what I was doing. And like for my husband, for example, you know, we got together when I was 23 years old. So drinking played a big part of our relationship and is really how we bonded and how we had quality time together. So it was kind of like, what do we even do now? And I remember for him, I did this breadcrumb strategy where I wasn't just like, I'm never drinking again, you know, get over it. I basically like would tell him like these little clues and hints about how good I was feeling. Like, oh my gosh, I slept better than I ever have, you know, without alcohol. I'm feeling so good. My mood is so good. I'm feeling so much happier. I haven't laughed that hard since high school. So by the time I was ready to like really unveil to them, like, I don't think I'm going to go back to drinking or I really like this like alcohol-free path. He could see how much happier I was. He could see how much and understand why. And what I did too, that I always recommend my clients do is that, you know, I didn't just want to shut off quality time with him and say, okay, since we're not drinking together, you know, now we're like, you know, not bonding as much. I had to get intentional about how to bond with my husband. So instead of going out for like a Friday night happy hour, we actually decided to sign up for a half marathon together. and we started training together. So our new date night was to go running for like 5 miles at a time outside, which was so fun and totally different, but kind of got us closer in a different way. We also really got into board games and hiking. And so, you know, I also got a lot of mocktails. So if he still wanted to drink, for example, like I would just have a mocktail with him. So it's like I was really willing to show him that like I'm really devoted to us and our quality time. I just want to reframe and change that. And it ended up getting us so much closer than ever before. My family is interesting. Like at the same time, my sister started drinking less. Like everyone started kind of drinking less because I think, again, you know, sometimes everyone's thinking the same thing. Like alcohol doesn't serve me as I'm getting older. These hangovers are getting worse, like, you know, all this stuff. And it just takes one person to kind of go ahead forward and be kind of like the role model and the ringleader. So I actually had like really pleasant experiences. And I remember even going to parties, like my first few months alcohol free with like an alcohol free beer and just being like, did you know they make these? Like I was so excited almost to be there being like, did you know you could hang out and have so much fun and have not even a single negative consequence the next day? Like it was like I discovered this secret. So I think my energy, my confidence, like really leading with happiness, you know, when someone asks you why you're not drinking, you're saying, I'm taking a break and feel amazing. How can anyone argue with that? How can anyone say, no, please have a drink and feel worse?
Yes, 100%, exactly. And I think it's like you're saying, it's like being, instead of telling people like you shouldn't drink, it's bad and la la la, just leading by example or just showing people like physically, mentally, emotionally that you feel so much better. It's like being the lighthouse. You're not telling people, you're just sort of showing what is possible and giving other people permission to do the same. It's that weird, like, kind of, you know, kind of herd mentality, I guess, of like everyone drinks, so I have to do it. Whereas if you kind of can show what's possible, it gives other people permission to explore it.
Absolutely.
Which is really cool.
Yeah. And I do think that if we're really being honest with ourselves, even someone who loves drinking, there's a hate there too. They yes. don't love every aspect of it. There is something they don't like about it. And you're opening the door for that consciousness to breed and the permission to kind of dive into those feelings a little bit instead of just being the I love wine person, because there's something deeper there.
Yes. And and generally speaking, the people who maybe have the strongest reactions of what are you doing or how could you not drink, like you're saying, there's something within them that is, you know, struggling with potentially, you know, their own relationship with alcohol, say.
Yeah.
Because most people will just kind of accept it and be okay.
Yeah. And that's why 10 years ago, if I was confronted with that non-drinker, I couldn't have even conceived of it.
Yes, exactly. You said something at the beginning, which was really interesting about like belonging and that alcohol can bring this sense of belonging, be it to a group or even to self. I think sometimes alcohol, it's an interesting one. It can either like connect you to yourself or disconnect you, and sometimes almost happen at the same time. So for you, it sounds like now you're very connected to yourself and have a very good sense of belonging. But did it take a while for you to get to that place as you stop drinking, or did you kind of feel this connection to this self, to yourself, and this sense of belonging quite quickly after giving it up?
Yeah, good question. So just kind of thinking back, you know, when I think of that belonging that I got from drinking, it was this sense of like camaraderie, or like we're all doing this thing, we're all staying up late, we're all, you know. And if you think about it, as children, you know, we witness people drinking, and it's this thing that adults do, and we can't do it as children, right? And even as a young person's mind, we might not consciously remember, but we demarcate as like, oh, when I get to drink one day, I will finally be an adult. I will finally be accepted in this club. I will finally be this person, right? And so it's really deeply subconscious and goes way, way back. And so one of the hardest things for people is to be like, well, if we remove alcohol, how am I going to be accepted in the club? And will I not be the cast out? And that's very, you know, even as our, you know, genetic type of biology, it's really scary for us, right? Like if we were cast out of our tribe when hunter-gatherers, we would have died. Like that is a very scary proposition. But I love the question, what do we actually want to belong to, right? Because there's so many different social elements and groups of camaraderie and groups of support and groups of, you know, connection. What do we want to belong to? And sometimes the thing that we're belonging to, you know, maybe it's drinking on the weekends or going out for happy hour, like it's actually not giving us a source of meaning or true connection at all, right? It's kind of surface level. I mean, you don't know how many fake friends I made or conversations I don't remember with drinking. And so I really started to ask myself, what do I want to belong to? And I started to get really into this idea of being more successful, not like in on paper or for, you know, someone else's approval, but for like the things I really wanted to accomplish in my life. I really respect people who write books, for example. I really respect people who put work out into the world and help people in some kind of way. And I was like, that's what I want to belong to. That's what I want to be a part of, not staying up late, you know, and then feeling like crap the next day. And I think when it came to the relationship with myself, you know, alcohol essentially is a depressant that also stimulates stress hormones. So it's both like a stimulant too. So we actually release cortisol, adrenaline, and dynorphin when we drink, which makes us feel very low, anxious, and sad. And so, you know, but with the depressant nature, it numbs our emotions and it disconnects us, I believe, with our true self. And it pushes down the things that we don't want to feel in that moment down and then compounds them and makes them worse the next day. So, you know, as a person who started drinking at 17 and stopped drinking when I was 30, I would feel like I almost like was a little scared of truly getting to know myself during that time. Like I actually, like I'll give you a little analogy. I really wanted to be a writer ever since I was a little girl. And I would write a lot of short stories and poems and plays when I was younger. And as I start drinking in college, my writing just dries up. I stop writing. I can't even access anything. But I never lose the desire. I always want to try to write, but I have the worst writer's block. And I had to really show myself this, that if I wasn't willing to feel my emotions to the deepest ability and quality, how could I ever think that I could write about someone else's, right? It's like this deep emotional intelligence that I was blocking myself from actually feeling the depths of all of my emotions, processing them, using them as tools to make shifts in my life instead of just numbing them, right? And it wasn't like I was numbing them every day, but you know, I had this pattern, right? With the weekend, like most people do, that I wasn't really allowing myself to get to know myself in that way. And I think that ability to learn to process my emotions helped show me where and what was missing in my life, what was unaligned, and where I needed to, like, where I wanted to go, and gave me kind of that desire and that direction as well. So I think I really got to know myself. You know, a lot of times I will walk talk with my clients and just ask them, what do you want? And on average, most people don't know the answer to that question. And I think that is one of the step ones about really feeling a sense of belonging with yourself is knowing yourself totally. What do you want? What do you want in this moment? Maybe it's changed from last year. Maybe it's changed over the last 5 years. Maybe you're a different person than you were, you know, 5 years ago, and you haven't allowed yourself to really get to know yourself again to kind of move forward into the next phase of your life, which I think is really important. So I think both in the sense of belonging with others, of asking yourself, what do I want to belong with? Like a rich tapestry of connections that support me and my growth and my dreams and my ambitions, or just the superficial stuff, you know, at a party. And then also really rediscovering myself and my desires has been so key to that ultimate fulfillment. And I mean, you know, what are we all here for? I think fulfillment is the deepest need that we are all looking for on this planet at the end of the day.
Yeah. It's so powerful. And that question, what club or what do I want to belong to? It's a really incredible question, because it just, again, just makes you think that little bit deeper and go beyond the superficial of potentially what's around you. And just, yeah, again, connect to yourself and really ask yourself those probably really hard questions if you're 25, 30, 35, asking that question and then having to sort of address and look at that is scary, but on the other side of that, really, really powerful. It's a really incredible question.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have such rich sources now of connections and just beautiful friendships and relationships that really support me, and also my individualism. Like, I am still an introvert, right? So it's like, I don't actually need to be going out every single weekend all the time socializing. I need that time for myself too. So it's also like really recognizing where my needs are for alone time, being with other people, and then what lifts me up when I'm with other people. Going to like a networking event with 200 people in the room and drinks everywhere is not my idea of a fun time. Having a really deep conversation with you over coffee is, you know?
Yeah, Totally. 100%. You said, I can't remember what you said, but it made me think. So I don't really drink. Like I would say I don't drink, and it wasn't necessarily conscious, but it just happened. It was one of those things that just happened. And there was probably a year where I would have a drink every now and then if I was at dinner with friends or, you know, at the pub in the afternoon or whatever. And what I really noticed was when I would, even if it was one drink, when I would drink, I would sort of become like less conscious and less aware of what was around me. And for the first time, I was like, I don't want that feeling. I think I used to like kind of becoming less conscious of myself and what was around me when I was drinking. But I'm at the point now where I'm like, no, I want to be connected and aware and conscious of what's around me. And it was just a really interesting shift, because I felt, I think, connected to self and kind of more so the external. So I didn't need the alcohol to sort of numb what was happening around me. And I think it's when you stop and have those breaks that you actually realize the difference, you know, in terms of how you can feel and what you actually want out of alcohol and why you're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like as consciousness it's raising, I think, in this planet, I think more people are interested in that as well. And it's like, you know, the idea of mindfulness is very big as well. And it's like alcohol actually turns us mindless, you know, and our source of like presence and connection and deep, you know, just understanding in those moments, like, you know, I don't know where the brain goes, but even after just one drink, I found myself getting more insular. So I'm not talking like a blackout, but even just one or two drinks, I would just get more revolving around my own self, my own thoughts. I wasn't listening as well, you know, just like all that kind of stuff. And so that like recognition that like, wow, I'm actually more interested in what you have to say than like when the waiter's going to come back type of a feeling was, you know, something that was like, this is the source of real connection and real presence with people. And I hear, you know, I'm not a mom myself yet, but I hear a lot of parents who, you know, you have used alcohol for a long time to reward themselves after the, you know, hard task of, you know, raising their kids, putting them to bed, but it's also made them so quick to just want to speed through that. How can I get through this night as fast as possible so I can get to the wine? And it's like, without that, it's also like allowed just the mundane moments, because alcohol also does change our brain chemistry. It's not just this metaphorical stuff we're talking about. It actually allows those mundane moments to have more joy. It's like you find the joy in, you know, pushing your kid on a slide or something like that. And I found that so acutely, you know, when alcohol, that cortisol, adrenaline, dynorphin that alcohol pumps out into our body, you know, when that goes away because we're not putting that into our system anymore, alcohol also at the same time depletes our ability to feel dopamine naturally. Because there's such a big spike of dopamine we get from alcohol, our brain is like, this is not natural. And what happens is the receptors that actually catch dopamine start to retract. So someone who drinks has less dopamine in their brain than someone who doesn't drink. Alcohol also lowers our ability to feel serotonin and GABA. Those get reduced as well. So I feel like as a drinker, you could say that during the week, I was always feeling this apathetic low. I wasn't depressed. I was a totally normal, optimistic person, but it was always this low. And then I got to drink on the weekend and feel this high and then go back to this low and crash, right? And when I took a break from alcohol, my neurochemistry rebalanced. So now my normal mood is up here. And I relish the, you know, sunshine on my skin. I notice the beautiful sunset. I notice the like leaves whistling in the background, you know, these little things that were almost getting passed by. And almost like, I remember I was on a hike once with my husband just about 10 years ago. And, you know, it's a beautiful day. We're like in this beautiful forest, you know, I'm with my most favorite person in the world. And in my brain that registered as a 5, because I couldn't wait to get to the happy hour later, that was the 10. And what happened is my brain and anyone who stops drinking, it recalibrates. So the actual beautiful moments of your life start being the 10 instead of the artificial reward, just like cocaine or heroin isn't really the 10 anymore. You know, it's just a fake source of stimulation, pleasure in your brain. It's not the true source of joy.
Yes, 100%. And so how long, say, from stopping drinking, is it in terms of the kind of neurochemistry and what is happening in your brain, how long does it take basically to sort of, I guess, rebalance or level out what's happening in your brain once you stop drinking?
Great question. So it can definitely vary person to person, but maybe around 2 to 3 weeks for the the stress hormones to start, like, really be detoxed completely and stop being released so much. But then the other effects, I would say about 4 to 6 weeks. And so, you know, we have the dry months. You know, a dry month is a great time, dry July or dry January, to take a break from alcohol. But in my book, I actually recommend at least 2 months to really get the full effect. And the longer you go, the better it's going to get. Like, it just compounds and compounds, you know, over and over and over. And just everything gets to get better, I believe, in my estimation. But I would give myself at least a 2 month break to, you know, have a fair shot to really feel the full effects. There's a lot of health effects that happen too, like your blood pressure, blood cholesterol, inflammation, brain growth, all of those things can go down. Cancer markers in your body go down. So it's like, if anyone wants to get healthier, it's incredible. But, you know, even if the 2 months is like the best results that you might see and feel, and you might even change your mind about even wanting to go back to drink, you know, for anyone who's listening and just interested in this conversation, any effort is a good flex to already start practicing like your alcohol-free muscle. You know, even if taking 2 nights or 3 nights seems like a stretch right now off, that is a really good exercise to just practice being with yourself and starting getting comfortable with your skin and learning how to adapt without always using alcohol as a reward. So I hope that, you know, the fair answer is 4 to 6 weeks, but any effort is going to be in the right direction.
Yeah. And do you find with most of your clients, say they have a 2 month break, I know this is very, it's a generalization, but would you say that most people then decide to stop altogether, or most people, or some people go back, but it's much more reduced? Like, yeah, what do you see in terms of the change in patterns of drinking with your clients?
Yeah. So like, my work is never to be the sober police. That's not the point. I want to help someone remove their desire for alcohol. So a lot of the desire is subconscious beliefs, subconscious, you know, conditioning that's been imprinted. So if I can remove the desire for drinking, it's not about I can't drink, it's I don't want to drink. And what happens there is we start doing what I call success coaching, that I also certify coaches. So I teach this like process and how to work with other people. Is like, we start to ask those deeper questions. What do you really want out of life? Now that we've created some space away from alcohol, we get to go deeper. And so what I find happens is, once you remove the desire to drink completely, which can take a while, obviously, and fill it with this like newfound belief in yourself that your dreams are possible and that this fulfilling new chapter is unfolding in front of you, alcohol becomes really meaningless. And so definitely the most successful clients, around like 90% of the people I work with, decide to continue going in their alcohol-free journeys and continue finding this source of meaning and, you know, real purpose in this new direction that they're going forwards. It just like literally alcohol just becomes a small thing in their rear view mirror as just a past pattern that wasn't really serving them. And what they want to go is like the, you know, if we're talking about consciousness, it was like the unconscious part of their lives. And now they really want this big, bigger, deeper, more meaningful stuff. And it's pleasurable too, to know that they're working on things that really matter to them and that, you know, gives them that sense of pride and, you know, the sense of, you know, away from immediate gratification to like deeper, ultimate fulfillment. You know, because I think there's this quote by Napoleon, it's originally attributed to them, between the what you want now versus what you want most. And I think that's what we learn when we go alcohol free, is to trade immediate gratification, right? A 20-minute buzz, into what you want most. And so part of my work helping, you know, mostly women, is not just how to remove alcohol, it's how to discover what your deeper purpose is and really have a plan to move that forward. Because when you know what you want most and you actually have guidance and a system to go move forward towards that, you know, what you want in the moment just stops to have as much resonance for you, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So yeah, I find most people I work with like get to that point where, you know, it takes some time, obviously. And it doesn't mean you're perfectly alcohol free the whole point. Like, that's never the point. Obviously it can be helpful to like do that, but obviously sometimes, just like in my story, when you drink again, you learn a really good lesson out of it. Just like when you had a few drinks that year, you know, you're like, oh, it actually really does take me away. You kind of needed to experience that to really know, like, yeah, I actually don't think I like it.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And I think what you just said is a really important point of like, alcohol, people, not always at all, but alcohol can be, it's like the symptom, not the cause. So people drink because they're stressed or they haven't thought about what they find fun, or it's what everyone around them does. So when you kind of strip that back and connect again to those, or you have less stress, or you connect to what you find fun, yeah, like you're saying, people just don't then feel the need to drink. So it's actually like getting under the hood and getting to the root cause of maybe why people are drinking. And then it's not actually hard to keep going, you know, and do 2 months, 6 months, 2 years, etc., because, yeah, that root cause isn't there anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes it's like not very helpful to start there because like there's still so much alcohol beliefs that need to be changed, so much conditioning we got. But once you've kind of worked through that initial step, and I would just recommend my book, that's going to be a really good primer to start working through those beliefs. But then once you work through that, is that's the next phase. It's like if we don't find what's fulfilling and what gives you a sense of purpose, immediate gratifications like alcohol are still going to be alluring one day. You know what I mean? And I think that's the answer to me. I like the word purpose. It can seem a little daunting to some people because it's like, ah, what's my purpose? But, you know, ultimately we all have a purpose. We all have a big role to play, I think. And like really knowing passionately that you're stepping into your purpose, that you're living the life you came here, that you could die at the age of 90 and look back and not regret anything you didn't do. You know what I mean? Like this is the time, life is short, to like really dig deep and say like, what have I come here for? What did I be put on this planet for? What do I really want? How do I want to contribute? What do I want my legacy to be? What do I want people to say about me when I die? You know, these are really big questions we don't often consciously think about in our day-to-day lives, but they're the most important ones when it comes to, you know, really finding that source of fulfillment and that sense of meaning in life. And again, like when you find that, like I am high every day. I'm not, you know, taking any drugs or drinking any alcohol, but I feel that sense of highness, that source of fulfillment every single day. Why would my brain even look to something like alcohol?
Yes, exactly. You've mentioned that kind of there's all these subconscious beliefs around alcohol and that we need it. And it's very, I guess, intertwined with our society and certain cultures. So there's that. But at the same time, you would know far better than me, but there also does feel like there's this shift away from it and people are looking for something different. And I think that's especially true potentially with younger generations, like from, you know, the things I've heard and little bits that I've read, younger people just aren't drinking and it doesn't seem that it has the same allure as it did maybe for us and for people in our age group of this like cool, like, we're going to get really drunk and, you know, party. That I'm sure in some groups for sure that's happening, but there is a shift. So I'm really curious what you kind of see happening there, and also why you think that's happening.
Yeah.
Why there is this shift away from alcohol.
Yeah. Well, I love it because, you know, 15, 20 years ago, if you wanted to not drink, you had to either be pregnant or tell everyone that you're an alcoholic. Right? There was literally no excuse for not drinking not that long ago. You know, and it's really odd because it's the only drug we have to actually defend not partaking in. And I think what happened is that, you know, obviously some people will have the life journey where they did drink very much, that they needed to like maybe go to outpatient care or, you know, and then, you know, start doing the, you know, either recovery work or something like that. But that is not the majority of people. Right. And so I think what started happening is that people started saying, why do I have to hit rock bottom to just recognize that I don't maybe like this presence in my life, or I don't like how I feel about this, or I don't like some of the consequences? So I think a huge like raise in consciousness happened like maybe between 10 to 5 years ago, where more people were becoming outspoken about like alcohol not being the source of all things pleasure and amazing, you know, unless, you know, you have a problem type of a thing. And so more and more people started coming out and, you know, going alcohol free for other reasons other than just like a rock bottom. And it created this new movement of this acceptance, this permission, and also this like ability to just get curious about something without having to put labels on it or without having to go a prescribed route and just start talking about it. You know, like if we start drinking at 18 and the only time we can like not drink in our lifetime is when we're pregnant and then we die, do we really ever get to introspect and get intuitive and ask ourselves, like, does alcohol make me happy, for example? I remember when I was, you know, trying to change my relationship with alcohol before I even took the break, just kind of thinking it over, I would always ask myself that question. Do I have a problem? Am I alcoholic? And I could always answer no to those, you know, like, yes, I overdid it sometimes. Yes, we have some embarrassing stories and stuff, but I knew that like, it wasn't that. I was not anywhere near that level. And I was asking the wrong questions, basically, because I wish I asked myself, is alcohol making me happy? And in the long run, I know deeply what that answer would have been. Is alcohol aligned to my deeper values? Nope. Totally taking me away from my values of, you know, connection and mindfulness and presence and growth, all those kinds of things. Alcohol was my comfort zone, not my growth stimulator, you know? Was alcohol actually helping me achieve my bigger goals and dreams? Nope. Hell no. You know what I mean? And if I had those questions as a resource back then, I think I might have even come to the conclusion to take a break a lot earlier. And so I think what this new alcohol-free movement is doing is giving the permission to ask questions, you know, identify with all this like new cool mocktails and alcohol-free drinks that are coming out. It's kind of like, oh, there's this subculture building where alcohol is not at the forefront. And absolutely, Gen Z is drinking less than any other generation. I think they think that, you know, that's their parents' thing, or they're just like, maybe that because they're on more on the social media, they don't want to be caught in any kind of like, you know, there's a lot of different things going on. There's also alternate things, but it is this like, I think a culture. I'm looking on TikTok today, you know, and there's a young woman doing like a 25-step like skincare routine. You can't do that when you go out drinking all night. You know what I mean? It's like self-care and mental care and personal development, I think, are because, you know, starting with even our generation of getting really into those things, we're now building a culture for the next generation to even raise the bar on how much more conscious we'll be as human beings. And, you know, sometimes I will meet those people who still feel really pressured to drink at a young age. I was talking to this 19-year-old once, and he was a stellar young man. He had like a beautiful podcast. He was obsessed with success. He wanted to know all the mindset things about how to like just be the better version of himself. And he was just so precocious. You know, I was not like him when I was 19. And he told me that alcohol is the one thing that holds him back. And he's not drinking every day or anything like that. He's just going out with his friends at university. And he was already so, you know, cognizant of that. But he told me, but I don't see a way to get out of it. And that made me really sad because already he knows it's not serving him, but that he just sees this like he has no permission to change that. And I was like, we created that culture, right? We and our grandparents and our parents, like we created this drinking culture where you don't belong if you're not drinking. And that made me sad. And so I also think that I'm just as responsible of creating this new culture of like, it's okay not to drink and be proud of it. And it's totally a valid road to travel. And there's nothing wrong with you or embarrassing about not drinking. It's actually really courageous and cool. You know what I mean? And so I love to be just by my example on the forefront of that movement. I know, obviously, I'm like a coach and a leader and an author, but even someone who has like, isn't out there to like be on a pulpit, just the example alone, just going to that party and having a good time without alcohol is enough to create a ripple effect in your community.
Yes, 100%. And showing people that you can still be vivacious and lively and have fun without it is, I mean, that's such a key, it's such a key point. And like we said before, being strong and courageous in doing that is just, it's a really amazing example. And I think what you said before about like alcohol or drinking not being conducive with kind of growth and personal development and reaching your goals and all of that sort of stuff. Yeah, I think that's a huge part of it, and that we are in this really interesting point in time where people are wanting that. They're wanting kind of less of the, to put it simplistic, like hedonistic short-term gain, like you were saying, to more of this like growth, personal development way of being. And that can be seen through this like no alcohol movement, things like ice baths and saunas and all of these things that people are doing to kind of push themselves and kind of get uncomfortable rather than just staying in this place that is super comfortable and familiar, which alcohol can be. It's kind of two-sided, but it is because it's what you know. But yeah, people are kind of seeking something different and seeking ways to put themselves in situations where they need to push themselves. And I think the no alcohol movement is kind of a really big part of that, because like you're saying, you do then have to ask yourself all of these questions and kind of explore yourself a little bit more.
Yeah. And it's like, if you think you can't do something and you've always had alcohol in your life, like you don't even know what you're capable of. And that's like a really brilliant question. It's not a sad one. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And I mean, I think we also live in a really special time when, like, you know, maybe in the previous generation, it was really harder to focus on your dreams and personal development when we lived in a harsher world. You know, we actually, I believe, live in a world where so much more is possible. There's so much more access and democratization of, like, the ability to even go after your goals, so much information at our fingertips that, you know, it's like you need the belief to think that your dreams are possible in order to even start taking it seriously. And I think that's why it's easier to now focus on all these beautiful things that take you out of your comfort zone, because you know where you're heading is such a beautiful destination that you actually believe is possible for you. Which, you know, like, let's just look at my grandmother's generation. She lived through World War II. I mean, she's living a completely different reality than I lived, you know, and I'm so thankful for her generation and all the people that preceded. But survival really was their core focus and getting through the traumas they had to experience. Whereas today, obviously, we still have hardships and stuff like that. But we have to admit we live in a different world where I could literally get on a plane and see you tomorrow. That was impossible for my grandmother. You know what I mean? I can post a social media post that will reach 10,000 people. You know, like, it's just insane how different our world is today too. And so I think that growth is interesting because it's like, this is the secret. These are the steps to actually get to the point you want to go. We actually see a point to it, I think. If that makes sense.
Yes, yes. And we have, like you're saying, because we're not in, some countries are for sure, but where we are, America and Australia, we're not in that place of survival. We can actually be then more so on that growth kind of journey or trajectory. So, yeah, it gives us the ability to explore that.
Yeah. And I think we actually owe it to all the previous generations who didn't have that and to all of the people who are still in a very hardship based on where they're born to move forward with that. It's like the opportunity was handed on a platter to us. And when you don't take advantage of it, like, I think every Monday morning, the deeper voice I was getting from my intuition was, Carolina, you are made for more. You're made for more. You're made for more. And sometimes I think we feel selfish to listen to that voice, or who am I to do that when people are starving, or some kind of rationale, but it's the total opposite. Like, you have been given this ability, like, you do not take it for granted now, because you moving forward on your goals and dreams changes lives. And that is why you were put on this planet to do so. And I know that I'm standing on the shoulders of giants when I look at my grandma who barely survived and was bombed and went through so much traumas of her life. She went through all that. So now I could be afforded this position to go and help as many people as possible. She helped me so deeply by her legacy. You know what I mean? So I take a lot of, like, deep meaning. I love ancestry. I love history, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think that for all of us who are really living in a world where, you know, the most big thing that happens in our lives, obviously a lot of challenges happen, death happens, all of that is inescapable, but, like, just a stressful job is the biggest problem in our lives. It's almost kind of like, well, you know, no one's forcing me to work at this job. I actually have so much choice and autonomy. I could change. I could do this. I could try that. I could do that. And it's like, alcohol doesn't allow ourselves to be that creative and doesn't allow ourselves to get outside of comfort zones to try things new, you know? And I think it's just a beautiful thing to be able to just, you know, as an experiment, take the break away and see what changes when you really do the work on yourself. And, you know, I think the sky really, truly is the limit. And not everyone is in a place to be able to do that. So if you are, take advantage of it.
Yes. And again, when you do that, there is a ripple effect to those. There is just a ripple effect. And it does. You might not see it, but if the people who have the opportunity to kind of be in this place and explore these things, if every one of those people who had the opportunity is doing it, then that ripple is just obviously magnified, but it is actually meaningful and makes a big difference.
I mean, it can change whole systems, whole institutions. Like, it really can. I mean, just like we're seeing a shift right now in this one little sphere of, like, more alcohol-free options or lifestyles, you know, that didn't exist even 20 years ago. It was like either you were, you know, sober and you went to meetings, or you drank and you're normal, right? And now there's, like, a whole new kind of world to it where athleticism and personal development and mocktail culture and health are all intertwined. You don't need a reason not to drink other than just you prefer it for your lifestyle. So, like, we see just a shift there, and I think it's going to keep growing and growing. That's just one little micro area in the world. Like, we can make these changes in so many different areas.
Yeah. So for people who are, I guess, interested in this, who are currently drinking, but are curious or kind of have, like you said, that in kind of intuitive, like maybe this isn't how I want to kind of be living, apart from buying your wonderful book, what are some kind of, I guess, what would be your, I guess, initial practical tips for people to kind of start exploring or questions to ask themselves around, yeah, alcohol and just the best place for them to start on this journey?
Yeah, well, I think first of all, only the most intuitive person is going to get that type of hint, you know, like you are already need to recognize that you have a strong intuition and that that's literally, it's almost like the universe tapping you on the shoulder, like, hey, we have really big things to do here. You have a lot of purpose and meaning to explore in this lifetime. We don't have time for alcohol, you know? So it's like, it's not a curse. It's not something horrible that happens. I think it's actually really beautiful if you're starting to get curious and inquisitive. So really seeing it as that, because a lot of times the traditional viewpoint was like, I'm so unlucky. I can't drink and everybody else can drink, as if it's this huge benefit and something like that, you know? So it's like switching the tables a little, like, no, I'm actually the one who's like really lucky to be hearing this message is kind of really beautiful. And I would say too, that we get so much socialization around how cool and accepted and needed and, you know, all these intertwined meanings we get around alcohol. There's nothing more to alcohol than a beverage in a cup. It's a toxic one at that, right? But as a society, we add on all of this context, all of this meaning to alcohol. So the best thing I think to do would be leaning into some of the alcohol-free like literature, whether it's a book or a podcast, just to start to get your brain to think of it a little differently. You know, when someone asks me what to do or like, how do I have fun without alcohol? I remember that question because I went through it too. But now, 6 years later, I'm almost like, laugh at it. Like, wait, you can't think of anything to do. Like there's this beautiful world, there's mountains and, you know, turquoise waters and like all these things out there to explore. There's so many challenges and stimulating things to get involved with. But it's just a different way that I've taught myself to think, obviously, to be more open-minded on things like that. So it can really help to just kind of immerse yourself. Like I would recommend podcasts or kind of books at first. But then honestly, the next step after that is definitely to just try it. And, you know, whether that's a month for you or 2 months for you or even 3 days for you, whatever it is, it's beautiful. And you can learn all about it. But until you actually really do it for yourself and like, you know, feel the differences and start going through the growth pains, but also the really incredible benefits. Like I basically wrote my book in a way to tempt people into really getting excited about taking a break from alcohol. And then getting all of this evidence on what's happening with their body, their mind, their soul to be like, wow, this is so amazing. Why would I ever want to go back? You know what I mean? Yes. So it's like, know that when you try it, it's you're setting yourself up for incredible gifts that will come into your life as well. I'm not to say there's no hardships. You know, sometimes we have cravings or uncomfortable feelings that come up, but all of those are gifts as well to learn how to grow through them. And I would say that, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago before I stopped drinking, I was literally uncomfortable in my skin. I would go to my parents' house and we, you know, would drink at dinner. And if there wasn't any alcohol, I was like, this is not, you know, And, you know, that can be a typical situation where it's like, well, obviously we're used to drinking around our friends and family, and that's how it's just kind of built up in our lives. But why was I so uncomfortable? What was it about myself that I was uncomfortable about? I started the show by saying I was like very, you know, shy and introverted, and I actually used alcohol to feel more confident. But you know, what ended up happening is that not only would I embarrass myself sometimes with alcohol, but also, you know, every time I showed up to that social situation, there was almost like a part of my psyche that was saying, Carolina, you're not good enough. Nobody wants to talk to you. You have nothing interesting to say. You're not, you know, smart. Nobody has like any kind of desire to talk to you. But here, have this drink and then you'll be better. And so it was like through time, alcohol actually deteriorated my sense of confidence and my sense of standing on my own 2 feet and really finding those qualities from within. So it's like even the challenges that come up when someone goes alcohol free and takes a break, maybe they need to work on boundaries, for example. Maybe they need to work on finding confidence within. Maybe they need to work on not people pleasing so much. Like there's going to be stuff that comes up, trust me, you know what I mean? But it's also the most beautiful kind of growth that is meant for you, that is making you into a stronger, more confident, more loving person who's also going to be better matched to be a positive influence on the world.
Yes, 100%. And I would say I was similar. Like, I used to drink for sure to feel more comfortable. I was very unconscious at the time and very uncomfortable in certain situations. So I would drink, then would feel horrific and ashamed and everything the next day. And it took a while to get to the place where now I don't, you know, I feel pretty confident in myself. Like, I feel like I could be in many situations, and even if they're not my people, I could just still be there and be okay because it's fine. Much more like a stronger sense of self. But it, yeah, it takes a while to get there. But then when you're on the other side, it's so liberating and, I guess, empowering. Yeah. You know, it's a really cool journey to go on.
Yeah. I would say I think there's two really huge personal development journeys that like will just catapult you to the next level. One is becoming an entrepreneur, because you'll face all your stuff with that. And the second is, you know, going alcohol free. Yes. And, you know, it's definitely that growth journey, but it's so rewarding.
Yeah. And one last question. You've touched on quite a few things in terms of what going alcohol free has taught you or given you. But if you had to distill it down to one thing, I guess, what is the biggest thing that giving up alcohol has given you?
I think belief in a completely different world, like belief that my desires mean something and that I was put on this planet for a reason. Belief also in a different world, in the sense that I don't see things as black and white anymore. I'm much more open-minded to the way things can be and the way things can change too. But, you know, like I have to sometimes pinch myself. I used to work in a cubicle and just be stuck in this 9-to-5. And again, alcohol was the highlight of my week. Like, my life was so small and it was fine. And that was a phase of my life. And, you know, we all go through it, but like, I'm just such a different person. And alcohol opened up, I guess, my belief system, you could say, to really fundamentally believe in myself over doubt myself.
I mean, that's pretty incredible. That's a pretty amazing. Yeah, thing to get from just giving up wine and beer and tequila and all of these things. Like, when you phrase it like that, it's almost like not a question, you know? And obviously it's not that easy. It's a full journey, but that's an incredible, yeah, something really incredible to get from, yeah, giving up alcohol.
Yeah, yeah. And the cool thing too is that, like, you know, you don't have to decide today what you're going to do for the rest of your life. It just starts with experimenting with it.
I hope you enjoyed that episode with Carolina. There's some really interesting points in there, and I think it's just interesting to explore, yeah, your own relationship with alcohol, if it's giving you a lot, adding value to your life, and if it is, that's amazing. But if it's not, yeah, hopefully this conversation just sparks that curiosity and just option of it not being a part of your life. If you liked, please leave a review, subscribe, share it with a friend, and I will see you next week.